the Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future deco, modern, retro, and other related events. Also the stories that celebrate New Zealand's history and its people, as well as book reviews and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era.
Deco Retro, Deco Retro.
Listeners, this is Nancy on the Deco Retro program. Today we have in the studio Frances Walsh. Frances is an Auckland writer, researcher and journalist. She works for the New Zealand Maritime Museum as their in-house writer and is a former staff writer with Metro magazine. Recently, she was involved in writing the book Endless Sea for the Maritime Museum. This is her second book, the first one being a history of the New Zealand housewife, which was published by Random House New Zealand in 2011. Good afternoon, Frances. Lovely to have you on our program.
Kia ora, Nancy. Nice to be here.
Now, the Maritime Museum opened on the Auckland waterfront in 1993, and it has a sprawling and eclectic collection of Māori and Pacific voyaging. Can you tell us a bit about that?
And Pākehā, and European as well.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is eclectic. I guess we have about 3 million objects, which probably isn't that helpful get your head around, really. But because a museum like ours, like any museum, I guess, is about the affinity between artefacts and the kind of bewildering variety of relationships. But in terms of the Maritime Museum, in Aotearoa, I think we're all shaped by histories of movement and interaction. And
definitely, yes.
Yeah, our museum is definitely reflective of that.
Yes.
But you're right, we started in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps what makes us quite special is that we have a working fleet.
Yes, I've heard about that. Well, I've actually been to the museum and seen your working fleet. And it's intriguing, those boats. It really is. Can you tell us a bit about that?
They are. I mean, they're very sort of, the romance of the sea and all that. But their four vessels are quite different and come from, so chronicle different periods of history and different kinds of workmanship as well. But we have a little steamer called SS Puke, that was a tug steamer that was built up in the Kaipara in 1872.
Oh, so that's pretty old.
It's a gorgeous little thing, and it toots, and weather permitting, and if it's kind of not too temperamental, visitors can go out on the four vessels.
Oh, okay. What do you sort of bring the museum and book?
You turn up and book, but you can book.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely book. I mean, Puke is a very intimate little ride because only about five people can fit in it, and it goes around the Waitemata. And then we have the Ted Ashby. Ted Ashby is a really interesting boat in that it was built by volunteers in the museum as well as the shipwrights and staff. So the museum has about 150 volunteers, and they're very involved and crucial to the working and the fabric of the museum, and that includes model makers that visitors can go and see doing their intricate business.
Well,
and
some beautiful little models there, isn't there?
Yes, they are. And then we've got Breeze, which is a brigantine.
Love the Breeze.
Yes,
tall ship. I fancy going out on a ride with that.
Well, you can do it, Nancy.
Oh, okay.
So you can, as a member of the public.
Even at my age.
Age has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
And then we also have Nautilus, which is a motor launch that was built up in Auckland but travelled down to Christchurch in about 1912, 1913, but it also went over to the other side of the world during World War One after Gallipoli. And
Work
over there.
Mm. So it's got, you know, a really long history, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. So those are the four vessels. And also Te Toki Voyaging Trust, they also berth their waka occasionally at the museum.
Oh, great.
So if you're down there as a visitor, you can see these extraordinary kind of vessels and you know,
Now, I believe you have written a book, Frances, called Endless Sea for the Museum, and I'm sure our listeners would like to hear a little bit about that.
Yes, It's the COVID book because it was mostly written in lockdown. It's a book that is published by Massey University Press.
Yes.
And it's a book about objects and tonga from our collection, specifically 102 objects. And again, they're kind of these stories of kind of interaction and movement and relationships between people and objects. And it seems like a very important thing at the moment when, with COVID going on, it has been difficult for people to access the museum physically. So it's a way that we can get our collection out and make it...
reach the people, yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm.
Yes, so it will be, it's on the bookshelves, it hits the bookshops in mid-November.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, getting all the information in the stories, it must have been a massive task for you.
It was highly research-driven, which was, again, a bit tricky under
COVID
because it was quite hard to physically get to our library, which is a great resource, and it's open to researchers as well, the library. It's another way of, you know, that the collection and our resources are available to the public. But, it was a bit tricky. I mean, some of the objects have been researched previously, but a lot of them not so. And in the book, again, to make the collection visible and accessible, probably about two quarters of the book of the objects are not actually on display, which is very similar to a lot of museums. But
well, that's true. Yes.
Yeah. Oh. So what you see is just, you know, the inner life of the museum is quite rich in mystery, but what you see is not necessarily, you know, always an accurate representation because these decisions about what's on display are quite complicated.
I see.
So yes, a lot of the objects in the book, as I say, are not on display, which hopefully gives people this sort of idea, slightly pervy, of seeing things that you can't normally see.
I suppose so. That's one way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're in the archives or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. You know, have a poozle.
Yes.
Where you can't usually poozle. Yeah.
Fair enough. Now, the photographs, they were... they're beautiful, I've seen of them. So who took those and did you do those? No?
Absolutely not. That's not my, my area of expertise, but it is Jane Usher's. So Jane came in and photographed the objects, luckily for us, before lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they're exquisite.
Yes, beautiful.
As is Jane's work.
Yeah. Yes. No, what I've seen, you know, they look fantastic.
Yeah, and the book is designed by the wonderful Mr. Alan Deer and Dave McDonald from Area Design down in Hamilton, and they have a high regard for text and the aesthetic. So,
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be very interested, you know, to read that when it comes out, which is in November, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Now, one of the stories, I believe, from the book is about the pigeon post, which is intriguing. So I thought you might tell us a bit about that, Frances.
This is a remarkable story, really. And it really refers to what I mentioned before, is that, you know, you look at some of these objects that you will find in museums, and there is this extraordinary kind of connection of relationships and affinity between different objects. So it's hard, you can't really tell the story of Aotea Great Barrier Island's pigeon post without telling the story of the wreck of the SS Wairarapa in 1884.
Okay.
So the story is, and it's a kind of heartbreaking story that also is heartbreaking, but with the pigeon post, it's this sort of spiritual, you get a spiritual uplift with the pigeon pose. But the SS Wairarapa was on passage to Auckland from Sydney in 1884. And it ran headlong in the dark, just after midnight, into the cliffs of Ata. And it was, you know, you can imagine, it was in a storm, it was foggy, there were lots of livestock, as well as...
Horrific.
Yeah. Yes, 235 people on board, passengers and crew, half of whom perished.
Gosh.
So it was a grim story.
New Zealand tragedy, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and 30 survivors made it onto the cliff, and they were helped by local Māori, by Ngāti Rehua. So there's that connection there too as well. Mm. But the thing is, the story is driven because what happened then, Aotea Great Barrier was 100 kilometres from Auckland, but in 1884 you might as well have been on the moon in some ways. Well, not quite, that's an exaggeration, but you know, that contact with the mainland was via a steamer, a weekly steamer. Right. So because that was only weekly, it took about 3 days for the grim news to reach Auckland. So as a consequence of this... a couple of kind of live-wise entrepreneurs who knew their pigeons decided this was an opportunity to kind of get into speedier communication. So there was this chap called Walter Fricker who had these homing pigeons. Okay. And he decided that he would institute a commercial pigeon post, which...
What a
perhaps,
good idea.
Yeah, yes. Perhaps the first in the world.
Oh, really?
Given it was commercial.
Yes.
Yeah, because pigeons have been used, of course,
used
for a long
messages
time.
Since.
Yeah. Yes. So he trained the birds up by sending them on gradually lengthening trips to, I think he started off in Hamilton, the Motorua. And in 1896, he said he trialled Ariel, who was one of his pigeons, on a test run to Auckland, and he or she, I don't know which, made it in an hour and 50 minutes. And
That's pretty good, isn't it?
I thought it was remarkable. Mm. With five, they called the little pack Flimsets because they were this very lightweight kind of quarto-sized paper.
Okay. Tucked it around a ring on their leg or something, didn't they?
Literally, So in 1897, he began his operations, which was the Great Barrier Pigeonogram Agency. They made 8 trips a week.
Gosh, but then quite something.
I know, but then he got competition from a man called Mr. Parkin. And Mr. Parkin was quite...
Saw an opportunity, did he? And
thrusting.
He did have a bit of it, yes.
Mm. Undercut Fricker by, you know, and then his birds seemed a bit kind of pacier. And apparently it was a very frosty relationship because the pigeons used to fly into each other's lofts and others, but the blokes. but the interesting thing, and back to the museum collection, is in 1898, Parkin released a postage stamp. And again, meant to, world first, apparently, to issue a stamp for an airmail service.
Wow.
Then Fricker retaliated with his own little triangular stamp. Anyway, it goes on. But anyway, we have a little triangular stamp.
Yes.
And it operated until the early 20th century when the telegraph cable was laid from Coromandel to the island in 1908. But the kind of interesting, the interesting aspect of it is, so we have this gorgeous little triangular stamp, but we also have clay pipes that were found.
So what are they about?
So they were found from the wreck of SS Wairarapa, and these little clay pipes were kind of these wonderful democratic little objects that were quite ubiquitous in New Zealand early on. And they were found, for example, they were found everywhere, actually, where blokes congregated.
Were they handmade or...?
They were cast. And it was before mass-produced cigarettes hit the market after World War I. And they were these sort of fragile little things that that served a great purpose because I came across this amazing stat that said in 1864, on average, 3.4 kilograms of tobacco was consumed or smoked per person annually. So it was extraordinary, you know. So everybody was doing it. And these little clay
pipes, unfortunately.
So these little pipes were given out free at pubs. Because I guess it might have, you know, made people, made the blokes linger longer.
Right.
You know, the old smoke and the old drink. And they were, they're a kind of mother load as an object because they're kind of, that you can tell all sorts of things from them. They're class marked, like working class men had shorter ones.
Right.
Your more leisure class had longer ones.
More elegant ones.
You know, women in New Zealand, women smoked. Modern woman. Maori woman, rural woman.
I remember when seeing Maori woman, you know, with clay pipes.
Yeah.
In Whanganui years, so many years ago that I don't like to remember, but
So they're sort of extraordinary little objects. And they're differently designed and so forth. And obviously sailors like to smoke too. So it's unsure really where these pipes would have come from at the bottom of the sea, but they could have been sailors because sailors like to smoke quite a lot to starve. You know, they were obviously staved off anxiety and kind of hunger as well as, you know, I guess, you know, a habit. So it's a kind of great little tangle of stories, I think, all of which are in the book.
And another one which I found quite interesting was the one about the sailors and their embroidery.
That's
you sort of don't think of sailors doing embroidery, but when you think of it, they're sail makers, aren't they? So they good with the needle.
Tough men, delicate work. I mean, and in the days of tall ships, we've got three of these exquisite. They were called woolies because they were made by sailors on tall ships, and the material, the fabric, was Berlin wool, which was easily kind of untethered, and that was easy to do long stitch and quite quick.
So they could sort of take strands out.
And they were, it was also in Victorian times when, you know, as you know, there was this kind of burgeoning of interest in needlework. But sailors, as you say, were very good with the needle. Because they had to be.
And it probably filled in a lot of time too.
Yes, exactly. Downtime on these ships. They were highly crewed.
Right.
Because they needed to be, unlike, you know, container ships, for example.
So the embroidery, Frances, what is it of? You know, what is it? A sort of picture type thing or what?
Yes, they were portraits.
Okay.
Of mates on board. No, they were all of ships, which of has a logic to it. And they were in broadside, so from the side.
Yes.
So the lines and the details of the ships, I guess, were in relief. But they're so exquisite, and the three we've got are really quite different because they really do show a certain kind of artistic prowess, really. One of them, I'm sorry, I can't remember which, but is almost sort of modernist in its kind of cloud formations, and another is quite, the seas are depicted in different ways. Very, very skillful, I think, you know. Exquisite things.
Yes.
But I love the idea of, you know, the guys sitting down with
their clay pipe.
With their clay pipe, yeah, that's right. Watching pigeons fly overhead.
Yes, wow. Fair enough. Now, Frances, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time. It's been most entertaining, and I'm sure our listeners will love this program. Now, you have chosen a special piece of music that you would like us to play.
Yes.
To finish the program.
It's one of my favourites.
So what is that?
It's called Rock the Boat by the Hughes Corporation. And I think, you know, encourage people to get up and, you know, move.
Exactly.
In their bedrooms.
It always makes me feel like that anyway. And great. And thank you very much, Frances, for coming in. I'm sure our listeners will enjoy the program.
Yeah, thank you so much. And could I just put something out there that we would love to hear more stories about the objects that we are entrusted to care for in the museum. So if any of your listeners have, you know, stories about the SS Wairarapa or the Pigeon Post or the Woolies, please, please contact me at the museum.
Right. Well, that's good.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Frances. Thank you. So I'd like to know.
Your touch has thrilled me like the rush of the wind, and your arms have held me safe from a rolling sea. There's always been a quiet place to harbor you and me. Our love is like a ship on the ocean. That flows from you. Don't let me drift away, my dear, when love can see me through. Our love is like a ship on the ocean. We've been sailing with a cargo full of love and devotion. So I'd like to know where you got the notion. Said I'd like to know where you got the notion.
Listeners, this is our last program for 2020. Hope you have enjoyed them. We will be back on the second Wednesday of January 2021 at the same time. Philippa and I wish you all the joys of Christmas and a very great COVID-free new year for 2021. Thank you for being with us for this year. Bye.
If you enjoyed our program today, listen every second Wednesday of the month at 2:10 p.m. or download us anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/DecoRetro. And we would like to thank our sponsors, Club Moderne, Art Deco Society Auckland. We will keep you informed of all future exciting and glamorous events to be held by Club Moderne. For more information, email judith.moore650@gmail.com. That's judith.moore650@gmail.com. Bye for now.
Hello, Mia Chabula. Hello, Mia Chabula. Hello, Mia Chabula.